Welcome to Hero Hype episode 32. As you can tell, I am not Danya. Danya won't be able to join us this week, but we have brought in two very special guest hosts to make up for Danya's absence. First, we have friend of the show and hashtag Team Tony, Karen is back. Hi, Karen.
Yes. Hi.
And we have a first timer from Hypeable. We have Kristen. Hi, Kristen.
Hello.
Where might people have heard you before from Hypeable?
Well, way back in the day, I was on Sorkin series, which I think about 12 people listened to. But after that, I was on Vampire Hype for a while, and I'm still on Once Bowl, so I'm sure you've heard me off and on. And I'm also on Book Hype occasionally, too. So
you're probably familiar with Kristen, but
yeah.
She is finally joining us on Hero Hype to talk all about superheroes.
Oh, am I excited.
That's good. So just a reminder that if you want to get in touch with us, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at Hero Hype Podcast and at Hero Hype Podcast at gmail.com. So we love to hear from you guys. So we'll just go through as usual. So we're taking the week off of Brief History. We'll be back with it on the next episode. Danya is not here, so we're taking over and no Brief History this week. So we're just going to move right into the television headlines before we get into our episode discussions this week. So our first bit of news is that Agent Carter, which was originally supposed to premiere on January 5th, has been moved back 2 weeks because of the State of the Union. So now we'll be getting the premiere on January 19th, but that only gives 7 weeks for 10 episodes. So that means we're going to have to double up on the episodes a few times, which is great, but also kind of sad. So are you guys looking forward to Agent Carter coming back?
What question is that?
I mean, I don't know.
Actually,
the correct answer is yes. But
yeah, definitely. I'm actually not upset about the delay because I am going to be in Disney when it premiered originally. And so now I don't have to miss the premiere. And also two other shows premiere the same night. And it was going to be a bit stressful for me. So I'm not that upset about this.
I'm only upset because now I don't get to lord it over Karen's head for a week. But, you know.
You would, too.
I would. I totally would. But no, I'm just excited for more Agent Carter. So if we have to wait a little bit longer, I will survive.
And it means we get weeks of double episodes. So that'll be fun.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And it'll be lots more Agent Carter on the podcast, too. So that was really all the Marvel TV news we got. We have Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to talk about in a bit, which Danya is very sad she doesn't get to talk about because she had a lot of feelings about this episode. We had some words about that episode, but we'll get there. But we'll move over to DC TV news first. Praise the comic book gods because Supergirl is getting a full season order.
Yes.
We're getting 20 episodes. So usually the typical order is 22, but Supergirl premiered several weeks later than the other shows. And it's also probably really expensive because it has a lot of special effects. So I don't think it's anything to be super worried about. But we're getting more Supergirl.
Yes.
I'm so into it.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. You guys are 2-2 so far. Good.
We can come back. That means we can come back, right?
Yes.
I mean, Karen kind of has to because she's our token Team Tony.
Yeah.
So, yay for more Supergirl. We love it. We'll be talking about Supergirl in a minute. Also on the DC side, we had the Flash and Arrow crossovers this week, which had some crazy stuff go down that we will talk about. But the producers were talking about kind of the effects of it and what it's going to mean moving forward for all three shows since it was setting up Legends of Tomorrow. We talked about how Felicity is going to find out that Oliver has a child, even though he tried to slide that under the rug in the new timeline. So they said that if there's a secret somewhere, it's going to come out and it's going to have some serious consequences. So that's going to be a problem. So
Oliver and his secret.
Yeah.
Come on.
Has he not learned yet? Like, that's my thing. Like, Barry specifically told him, you need to tell her because you not telling her is a bad idea. And he doesn't tell her. And I'm just really frustrated with this whole plot line.
Barry's like, I've been there. I know this is a bad idea. Just
I've seen it happen.
And then he does it anyway.
And then Oliver's just like, yeah, no. I'm not going to listen to you.
But we'll talk about that more in depth. But yeah, that's a bit frustrating. They also talked about why this isn't, they didn't make this a Connor Hawke storyline. Connor Hawke in the comics is Oliver's son with his high school, or his college girlfriend named Sandra Hawke. As we know in the show, his girlfriend, ex-girlfriend's name was Samantha and the child was named William. So this is not Connor Hawke. And they said that they didn't make this about Connor Hawke because they wanted to have the leeway to still have Connor Hawke, and having him be a child here makes him too young. And we do know that Connor Hawke is going to appear in Legends of Tomorrow, so there's that. So they're adding some original stuff there.
I was going to say, Oliver's just going to have all kinds of love children.
I was going to say, how does that work? Like,
well, Legends of Tomorrow has all that fun, timey-wimey, you know, fun stuff. So I'm sure there will be some craziness going on.
They said he's not going to be the child of Oliver and Sandra Hawke in Legends of Tomorrow. That doesn't tell us whether that means he's not Oliver's son. That doesn't tell us a lot other than it's not the exact comic book story. So who knows?
We'll just have to wait.
Yeah. A few other things they're going to talk about in Legends, why they can't just use time travel to save everybody all the time like they did in the crossover. Like, they're like, hey, second chance, Barry saved everybody. Good job. And they said, well, we can't actually keep doing that. So we're going to explain why in Legends. So that's probably a good idea.
Yeah, that seems necessary.
You don't want to get into Doctor Who syndrome where there's 55,000 timelines and everybody's, you know, things get very, very crazy very fast.
Yeah. And then kind of the last bit of news there was that we're not really going to see crossovers with Legends and Arrow and Flash. So we might see Arrow and Flash characters on Legends because they're going to be jumping around in time. So we might see people from those worlds on Legends, but we're not going to see the Legends stuff jump onto Arrow and Flash this season. So Legends is going to be kind of its own thing once it's been launched. So how do you feel about that?
I think that makes sense. And because Legends clearly has so much going on in that storyline and it's such a big team to start out with, I don't really mind. As long as they keep doing Arrow and Flash crossovers, because I live for those.
Yeah, and as much as I want to see, like, Arthur Darvill and Emily Bett-Ricard's, like, on screen together, I will survive. Like, I just think that would be a really ridiculous pairing, and I can't wait. It's got to happen eventually. So, you know, maybe further seasons something will work out, or maybe she'll pop over. But, yeah, I can kind of see where they want to establish Legends of Tomorrow before they start, like, pulling people from it, you know, and moving them around, so...
Yeah, they have enough going on with Arrow the Flash. They had a whole lot of crossover last season, so I'm sure we're going to see some surprise crossovers
as
the season moves on in the second half of the season. So I agree with Karen. I live for those. I love them. So, and speaking of Legends of Tomorrow, today we got a new poster. Did you guys see the poster?
I did.
Yes, I did.
Okay, I think I might be the only one that doesn't like it.
What don't you like about it?
I don't like the angle. I think the angle looks really dumb because they're standing there, but it makes them look like they're flying. And I just like, I get putting interesting angles on posters, but it's like sideways. And I don't know. I really don't like it. But I think they look cool. Like the individual characters all look pretty awesome. And I'm really into Hawk Girl. I think she's awesome, and just seeing them on the poster is pretty exciting.
I think the angle is just because they have so many people that that's how they can fit them all on it.
Yeah.
I think they could have done a better job.
Brandon Routh looks really weird in that for some reason. Maybe it's the angle and my brain cannot put it all together. But yeah, no, it's a nice looking poster. Just a funny angle. I do agree with you there.
But it's got all of our characters. The show is happening. I'm very excited. January 21st, in case anybody forgot. So it's happening.
Prepare yourself.
Oh, I need it in my eyeballs. I need it. Okay, so that was pretty much all the TV news. So we can move on to some TV discussion. We've got Supergirl, Flash and Arrow crossover, and some Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Where would you guys like to start? We'll let the guests decide.
I think we should start with S.H.I.E.L.D. because I have a feeling that you might think it's more negative, so we should end on a high note, therefore start with S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay. Yeah, I don't have nice things to say about this episode. I was tweeting very negatively while it was airing, and I'm still very mad about it, so.
Now, how did Danya feel?
She felt the same as I did.
Okay, so maybe it's a good thing Kristen and I are here.
Did you guys like this episode?
We didn't hate it. Is that
That's a ringing endorsement.
No, I mean, the episode as a whole, I thought worked. I definitely saw some issues. Like, there were issues, and I could see where people had problems, like, for sure. But for me, it worked, so I wasn't really upset.
Well, let's start if we have to. So we open the episode with Coulson and Rosalind are sitting down to have dinner because they apparently are working things out after he accused her of being Hydra and they had a bad time of it. But they're going to have dinner. And then she gets shot at the dinner table and dies on the dining room floor because that's what you do. And oh, I'm so angry about this. So it was Ward. He shot her and then calls Coulson to be like, hey, I killed her to cause you man pain because you caused me man pain and I'm a horrible human being. So now you should die. But obviously he's the main character, so he's not going to die. But what were your thoughts at this point?
Okay, well, first of all, completely shocked that they killed Rosalind. I did not see that coming. I was really enjoying their dinner scene. And I was like showing something to Kristen on my computer. And we were kind of just like, okay, it's just a regular scene, you know, like look at this funny picture for 10 seconds. And then all of a sudden I heard the bullet go through the glass and I looked up and she's holding her neck. And I'm like, they did not just do that. And they totally did just do that. So I am really upset that she's dead because I liked her, and I think she had an amazing relationship with Coulson that was really complex, and yet they had a lot of chemistry, and I'm sad that's going to be gone, but I'm also sad that, you know, this powerful, intelligent woman has been killed off this show, and I don't... The whole Ward thing, like, I'm still surprised every time he says he's doing something because Agent 33 was killed. Because in my head, I refuse to accept that he actually cared for her because I really don't think that he did. But apparently he did because he keeps bringing it up. So that still doesn't really make sense to me.
Yeah, Karen and I have a tendency to, like, while we're watching things, we'll pause the show occasionally and talk about stuff. It does happen. And it was almost one of those moments because I was telling her about how much I love that I don't think Roz was actually Hydra. I think she was working with this guy from the government who she didn't know was Hydra, and ta-da, she had been helping Hydra the whole time. And, like, we were talking about that as this scene, like, unfolded, like, as she gets shot. And then we both just kind of stopped talking and held our breath.
Yeah.
Like, what is going on? This is not okay. Yeah, I'm really, really upset to lose Roz. I loved her as a character, especially after the last couple of episodes and seeing just how complicated the whole Hydra involvement was. And I would have loved to have seen more of her, like, trying to figure out what was going on. But obviously, we won't be getting that. As far as Ward goes, I was one of the people in what first season who loved Ward and was like, yay, Team Ward, whatever. The more, as the show has gone on, like, he is not redeemable at all. And he needs, at this point, I think he needs to go. Like, there's nothing more they can do to make him interesting for me. Like, I feel like there was a lot that they could have done, but now he's just flat out evil, awful human being. And I'm pretty much just ready to see him go. And yeah, him and Coulson going after each other because they've each killed lady loves it's just kind of blah. Like, it doesn't excite me like some of the other storylines do. I mean, it's always nice to see the fighting and I love seeing Coulson kick some ass, but
yeah,
you know, it's just, it's not quite the same as it would have been if this, you know, if Ward wasn't flat out evil.
Hashtag stand on Ward, my favorite. Okay, here's my problem. This is a textbook issue of fridging, where we kill off a female character to cause man pain for a male character. This is a horrible tradition in entertainment. A lot has been written on how bad it is to do this to female characters. And they did it. And Ward literally says that I killed her to cause you pain, which is what fridging is. So they fridged her and they said, hey, we just fridged her for no good reason other than to cause man pain. And I think the least possible interesting story that S.H.I.E.L.D. could be focusing on is man pain versus man pain. And I am not even remotely here for it. So I think what Coulson and Roz had going on was very interesting. I think she could have been a very interesting long-term addition to the show. And to cut her off like that, I think this show has a problem of it sacrifices characterization for plot sometimes. It just is like we need to go breakneck and characterization suffers sometimes. And I think this is a case where they're like, oh, we need big shock factor, not taking into account that this is actually, this relationship between Coulson and Roz was far more interesting than what they were going to do with Ward. And I think it's a real shame. And S.H.I.E.L.D., I think, is better than this. I think they have done a very good job with their female characters. So I have much higher expectations for the way they treat their female characters. And so for them to fridge a character and literally say that that's what they have done disappoints me to no end. So the rest of the episode, I was just so furious that they began the episode like this. And they're like, and this is what is happening after. We fridged her. Ha ha. So, oh, I'm still so mad just thinking about it.
I can tell.
I've written about fridging on some of the other comic book shows on TV. And it's a problem. And S.H.I.E.L.D. has been better than that.
Well, and let me tell you what made me angry, because obviously I completely see your point, and no, I didn't like it because of that exact reason. I liked the twist just because I didn't see it coming, and a lot of television these days, they don't make you gasp or make you stop talking to the person next to you, you know? So I think, like, it was a good twist, even though it was really unfortunate. What made me angry was Coulson's actions, and this is going into our next point, because he was so reckless, and it's like, Ward has done so many terrible things to the entire team, and Coulson, the entire time, was like, no, we have to do this smart, and like, you can't just go off half-cocked and go after these people, we needed a plan. And then that's exactly what Coulson does, is he goes off half-cocked and he does stupid things because now it's been done to him, and that doesn't make a good leader. And I've always held Coulson to a higher standard. I've always thought he was an excellent leader, and I was just really disappointed in his actions.
Do we think the show wants us to sympathize with what Coulson is doing, or do we feel like the show is being like, hey, Coulson is doing something bad? Because I've seen different people reacting different ways.
I don't think we're necessarily supposed to think Coulson's on the up and up. Like, just how they set it up with him not telling anybody what was going on, like him not telling Mac and him sneaking off with Hunter and I can't think of her name at the moment.
Bobby.
But like, thank you, Bobby. Oh my God, just like left my brain. They didn't, if they wanted us to believe that what he was doing was truly like righteous and, you know, he's got every reason to do it, I feel like they would have informed us of what he was doing. Whether or not he tells the rest of his team, I feel like they would have told us. And leaving us in the dark makes me not trust Coulson because we have no idea what's going on.
What about you, Karen?
I don't know. I think it's difficult. I think we're always supposed to sympathize with Coulson, but like Kristen was saying, he's doing some things that he normally wouldn't do. And so I think you're supposed to be shocked by the lengths he's going to in order to find Ward. And I mean, especially that final shot and the final scene is so shocking and kind of borderline ridiculous that I think you are meant to be like, okay, Coulson, I know you're angry, but you need to rein it in. And I mean, I guess the one good thing is that he did hand off power to Mac to kind of put things in place for when he left. So he had a little bit of sense about him still, but yeah, he's just making really poor choices.
Yeah. The thing that also bothers me about this is they've already done this plotline with Hunter earlier this season. Hunter made bad decisions to go after Ward because he hurt the woman that Hunter loves.
And see, that makes
Bobby
a lot more sense to me. That is part of Hunter's character.
Yeah. And Bobby and him have a much stronger connection, mm-hmm. I would think, than Roz and Coulson do in the very short time they've known each other. So for Coulson to go off half-cocked here just doesn't feel right.
I agree with that. So I feel like this, for me, the storyline is uninteresting. It's tired. And I want him and Ward to just stay on the other planet and have it out and never come back at this point. That's how I felt at the end of this episode. And I don't think that's how I'm supposed to feel, but that's how I ended up feeling. So congratulations, guys. But Karen, as Karen hinted to, he did appoint Mac as director of S.H.I.E.L.D. That was one of the few things I was very much here for in this episode, because Mac is like the one sane person on the show. Like, you could argue that Bobby is also sane, but she likes Hunter, which takes a little bit of weirdness too. And I say that as someone who does like Hunter, but Hunter's kind of crazy. But
yeah,
Mac is like the one sane man trope, and he totally makes sense to be in charge.
But I've lost a lot of love for Mac because of his story arc. I still like him, but he's not the person I thought he was initially. And so I think I'm still a little bit bitter about that. I'm kind of glad that he's in charge now and that he was struggling to make some decisions, because he kind of gets on Coulson's case, which granted Coulson needs sometimes, but I was like, okay, Mac, now you can understand the pressure that Coulson has on him and how it's not always easy to make the right call. And I'm just hoping that maybe this loosens Mac up a little bit, because he's been getting more and more uptight, and I'm not really into that side of him.
Yeah, I couldn't help but like run down the team on my hand and think, is there anyone better than Mac? Like, you know, because it seemed kind of random to me that he handed it to Mac. Like, May is my initial thought, but then with the whole Andrew thing and everything going on, I can totally see why he doesn't want to hand over things to May. And like Daisy, yeah, there's no way he would hand it to her right now with everything going on. And, you know, so I kind of like ran down characters and I'm like, yeah, there really is no one else that could handle this pressure and take it on right now other than Mac. So I see why he did it. And I'm not upset about it at all. I do see Karen's point, though, like it would be nice for Mac to kind of see through Coulson's eyes and like kind of have a day in his shoes and see how hard it is. So I hope that good things come, especially for Mac, out of this.
I kind of laughed when Mac had the group like arming up and Joey and Lincoln were there and we're like, why'd you bring us? And Lincoln was like, I think we're all he's got.
Like, that's great. That was good.
Yeah.
Lincoln's pretty. I like him. So what Coulson ends up doing to go after Ward is kidnaps his brother. I totally forgot he had another brother. So that tells
you. So did I.
I've been paying attention lately.
I was surprised too. So it's not just you.
Okay, good. I was like, did we know he had another brother? Oh, yeah. And then when they started talking about the well, I was like, oh, right. I think I remember something about that. But it had been a while. So, but they go after him because apparently Ward cares for him. But the great twist there is that Ward's brother can't stand him. Like, Ward is like, everybody kept me from finding you. And he's like, actually, I did that myself. You're a horrible person and I didn't want to be near you. So basically, he said that what most sane fans say, that you can have horrible upbringing and still not turn into a psychopath. So,
yes. I was really into this, and I was like, all the people who hate Ward are probably cheering at home right now, because, and look, I've sympathized with Ward a lot longer than I think a lot of people have, and even though I'm over it now, I can remember those arguments that I made in my head about, oh, you know, he's had this terrible upbringing, and like, yes, that's the reason why he is the way he is. But it's not an excuse, and there's proof. You know, his brother did not turn out the same way. And I think that there's a lot more wrong with Ward than just his past and what has happened to him. And I actually really enjoyed this little part in the fact that his brother was like, yeah, he's crazy, and I don't want anything to do with him. It was a relief.
But then they still wanted to hand him over, which it was like, more terrible decisions. You basically want to give a stalking victim back to his stalker. Good job, guys. Like, you're supposed to be doing things for the good of the people, and this is pretty much the opposite of that, so.
And then Coulson jumps out of a plane and doesn't open his parachute.
Jeez.
So yeah, that was kind of the other part of the episode, is while Ward's getting his, trying to get his revenge, they also kidnap Fitzsimmons to get them to tell, basically to get Simmons to tell them how to come back from the other side of the monolith. And here was another problem. Guess what? They tortured the female character to cause the male character pain. Really good job with your female characters this episode, guys.
Well, I will say though, I loved that Simmons did not give in and that she was so strong about it, because, you know, they're not field agents, they're scientists, and they've struggled with that for quite a long time. But Simmons knows how big of a deal this is, and I'm a little frustrated with Fitz that he can't also see that. I was really hoping he wasn't going to give in.
Yeah, pretty much everything you just said. Like, I was impressed by Simmons. Like, yeah, I wasn't, looking back, I'm not a huge fan of the let's torture Simmons to cause Fitz pain, but I totally give the credit to her there. Like, she was stronger. If it were flipped, I don't know if Fitz could have lasted. Like, in the past, he has, you know, he's endured, but at this point, I'm not sure if he would have.
Yeah, Simmons has all that experience being trapped on another planet and having to survive. So
yeah,
she's gotten so much tougher. Yeah, I loved her in this episode. She was another highlight among a lot of lowlights for me.
All the Gemma love.
Yes. So they open up the monolith and send Ward leading a group to the other planet, because they want to bring back that creepy thing, whatever ancient evil that is on the other side. They want to bring it back, as you do when you're Hydra. So Ward's leading this, and they take Fitz with them. And then as it's closing, Coulson just like pops right through.
That was ridiculous.
And then hits his head on a rock.
Yeah, so I was kind of just rolling my eyes at that point, so that was a thing that happened.
That's pretty much our reaction. It was like, wait, did he just, wait, what? And then he's rolling down the side, you know, the side of the hill, and smacks his head on a rock. And I'm like, well, that was not going to be a smooth landing. Like, you had to know. Like, yeah, that's pretty much it.
Maybe that rock knocked some sense into him. I'm not holding my breath, though. So, any other thoughts on this episode of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Any positives we can leave people with?
Yeah, I don't know.
Not so much.
maybe like all the ladies will group up and come and smack some sense into all of the boys. Because May and Daisy were kind of sidelined in this episode. Like, they didn't have a whole lot to do. So maybe they'll have some kick-ass storyline coming up and they'll smack Coulson around and be like, listen to me. Who knows?
Yeah, he needs it at this point. All right. So that was Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Next week is the mid-season finale, and it won't be back till March. So we'll be filling the absence of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. with Agent Carter. So, as we said before, yay for Agent Carter. But I'm sure there will be a horrific cliffhanger that will hopefully be better than Coulson falling through the monolith. All right, so shall we move on to Supergirl?
Sure.
All right, so this week's episode of Supergirl was all about Kara and her anger and kind of the double standard that women face in the workplace related to their anger. So my first question is, has Kara seemed like she's had anger issues to you before this episode?
Yes, but not as pronounced.
Want to elaborate?
Well, I feel like when she talks to Kat, she does get quite frustrated. And I think that all of the issues, like all of the concerns and responsibilities that she has slowly gotten to her. And I think they did kind of come to a head in this episode. Now, saying that, did they sort of make this like an issue episode? Yeah, I think they did. I think they could have incorporated the issues a little bit better, but I don't think it was way out of left field.
Yeah, I thought the reasons for her anger as they like laid them out in the episode worked for me. Like, I didn't have any issues believing all of the built up stuff that she's just been kind of shoving down for a long time. But I don't think I would have ever thought anger and anger control was an issue for her prior to this episode. Like, it wouldn't have occurred to me that that's something that she struggles with. Now, yeah, I think they wanted that in this episode, and Melissa did a really great job, like, later on in the action scenes. Like, sometimes when people do angry face, like, it's really awkward and weird. And I thought hers was, like, really genuine and, like, it drew me in more. So I was really impressed with her. But, yeah, I wouldn't have said that prior to this episode that she had anger issues.
That was kind of how I felt. It felt a little out of left field for me. But like you, when they started outlining all the reasons she has to be angry, like, oh, yeah, that does make sense.
Yeah.
Like, she lost a planet and a family and just keep adding them on. So she has a lot going on. But the kind of moral of the story here was that she needed to figure out what she was really angry about. That she snaps repeatedly in this episode, but then she discovers that she's actually angry about not being able to live a normal life. She's angry about having, you know, lost her family and all that entails. So how did we feel about that revelation? Does that make sense as a core issue of anger for her?
Yeah, totally. I mean, she is quite a unique person. And even though she has her cousin, she doesn't see him a lot. And I get that, you know, as much as she wanted to become a superhero, and as much as that's put burden on her shoulders, she's never been normal. And it's always been a little bit difficult for her. All right, so the one thing that actually really annoyed me about this was the fact that Kat told Kara, "You're not really mad at me. Find the anger behind the anger." And then Kara was like, "No, actually, I am mad at you." And Kat was like, "No, you're actually not." Because, yes, she was. Like, just because there's something more behind her anger doesn't mean that Kat isn't horrible sometimes. And I really wanted them to have this, like, confrontation, not like an angry confrontation, but I wanted Kara to talk to Kat and be like, "Look, the way you treat me is actually not okay. You should know this because your mother treats you the same way." And that just really bothered me. And I'm kind of getting over this whole, like, Kat is a horrible person on the surface, but is actually kind of cool underneath it thing that they have going on with her right now.
Yeah, I think there's a limited lifespan on how long Kat can keep up this, "I'm going to treat you like crap on a daily basis, but when it comes down to it, we're the same. And I know, you know, like, I'm nice to you when you really need me to be." Like, they're not going to be able to keep up this shtick forever. So I'm hoping that something happens to change Kat's opinions of Kara coming up. It has to. But yeah, no, the one thing in life that I think makes me angrier than anything is when people tell me how to feel. So when Kat started, like, telling Kara, "You're not angry at me," I was like, "Oh yes, she is."
I liked her, like, very kind of meek, like, "Yeah, actually I was." I was like, "You probably should have been." Yeah, I kind of agree with that. And I was like, I think she was kind of angry at you. Just because she has other anger doesn't mean she wasn't angry in the moment. Mm-hmm. We can have different levels of anger. It's a complex emotion. But speaking of Kat, we met her mother. What did we think of her mother?
Yeah, she was just, like, awful, like, in every sense of the word.
Agree. Like, is there even anything else to say about her? Because she was awful.
Well, were we surprised that she was as awful as she was? We've had a few hints about their relationship up until this point.
I wasn't surprised. I basically thought this was the kind of person that she was going to be and was not disappointed.
Yeah, I think we expected it to be very much the relationship we saw.
And amazingly, if her mother is really that awful of a parent, Kat doesn't seem to be an awful parent. The interactions we saw with Carter, she seems to be a good mother, which, to give good advice.
Yeah, and I love that about her. So why is she continually horrible to Kara when her mother treats her that way? It does not make sense. I realize she has to sort of be this, like, badass woman at work and in front of everybody to kind of garner some respect because she's held to different standards, unfortunately. But the closer she gets to Kara, you would think the more she would take her under her wing and treat her maybe not like her BFF, because obviously they have a workplace relationship, but not treat her like a piece of crap.
Yeah. I think something has to be looming or coming that Kara earns the respect that Kat isn't giving her. Because more or less, it comes down to that. Like, Kat just doesn't give Kara the respect she deserves, or that we think she deserves. So something's got to be coming down the pike, storyline-wise, that is going to change some of that. Because I don't know how long you can have this woman just, like, berating your main character on a regular basis for no good reason.
And so she stands up for her.
Exactly. She thinks she's an excellent assistant. Like, she tells Kara that it was just for show, but I think that's a pile of crap. Like, she really does respect her as her assistant and think that she's doing a good job in a very demanding workplace environment. So why does she continually have to put her down?
I wonder if she thinks the way that she's interacting with Kara is how you pull someone under your wing, because it's such a cutthroat environment, especially for women, that she's trying to harden her up because she can tell that she's kind of a softie. Because every time she does something, Kara does something that Kat is like, oh, that's sneaky. Like, when she offered to babysit Carter, she was like, oh, you're asking for something in return. I like it. So I wonder if she's like, this is her way of taking Kara under her wing, which kind of comes out of a twisted relationship with her mother.
I guess that makes sense. It's just maybe she should, like, tell her that or something. I don't know. They need to, like, talk more on an equal level.
True. But speaking of terrible parents, we met another one in this episode. We met General Sam Lane, the father of Lucy and Lois. So, thoughts?
Not a fan. I've ever been a fan of Sam Lane. Like, I was a huge Smallville fan back in the day, and I don't think I even liked him on there at all either. So maybe I'm just destined not to like him.
I do not have nice words to say about this man. Like, everything I want to say is very bad, but just the part about him blaming Supergirl for sending this robot out against the city is so twisted, it's not even humorous. He did that, and the creator of the robot did that. It wasn't her fault. Like, yeah, she shouldn't have lost her cool, but they built the murder bot with a stealth mode. Who does that? It's their own fault.
That was my question. I was like, who puts a super stealth mode on the crazy murder bot that you're testing? Like, maybe eventually you put a stealth mode on it, but, like, this is the first test phase. Why? Why? Makes no sense.
He reminds me of General Eiling from The Flash, who they're both awful. Oh, and Eiling gets a comeuppance, so I wonder if Sam Lane is going to get some comeuppance at some point.
I hope so. I mean, Lucy's storyline was a lot more redeeming, I think, given her initial attitude.
Yeah, Lucy had a great arc in this episode, I thought. She kind of goes from being very much like her father's cheerleader and waving an executive order in Supergirl's face, and I wasn't impressed by her not knowing Supergirl is in the room with her, to being genuinely thankful to her after she saves her life, and even quitting her job, which actually shouldn't be that easy to resign her commission, but we'll just ignore that. So what did we think of her arc in this episode?
I definitely was happy to see Lucy as a possible, like, friend and ally. Like, prior to this, they had been set up to be each other's, like, foil. Like, and it makes me happy to know that Lucy isn't necessarily always going to be this character for Kara to kind of, like, measure herself against. In this episode, you saw Lucy kind of take it under, you know, take her own fate into her own hands and kind of make a choice. And in that, I feel like things might be better, could be better in the future between Kara and Lucy. And I really like the possibility of that.
And yet Sam Lane doesn't think she and James should be good together. That James isn't good enough for Lucy. And I was like, excuse you, James is a beautiful cinnamon roll, too good for this world, too pure, do not talk to me. James is everything. But he really hits him at that dinner, like, below the belt. He hits the exact fear that James told Kara that he had about, you know, just being associated with greatness, but not actually being anything himself. And Sam Lane seems to know that and went right for it. That was rough.
Oh, God, like straight to the jugular. It was really horrible to watch. And there's just, I cannot find a reason, a single reason to like General Lane. I mean, even his devotion to his daughter seems over the top, overprotective. She's a grown-ass woman who can take care of herself. Let her make her own mistakes. She's not a child anymore, and she's strong and intelligent and very well off in her career, clearly. And she doesn't need him to take care of her. And yet, he's always there. And when he, like, cock-blocked them holding hands, I was like, really? Are you 12? This is the most ridiculous thing in the world.
It was pretty bad. Yeah, but so what do we think Lucy's going to be up to now that she has quit her job and is going to be hanging around National City with James? Like, what does she have to do next?
I mean, she'll find a job, I'm sure.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out, it sounded in her conversations like she had some sort of law degree or something like that, just in her, the way she was talking and how she talked about it. So I'm assuming she's going to go out and find work and have a job, but we'll see.
Do you think she'll join the inner circle at any point, or is she going to stay an outsider?
Oh, I hope she joins the inner circle. I think that would be fantastic.
And then in my brain, I'm having conversations between Lois and Lucy where Lois doesn't tell Lucy about Clark and Lucy doesn't tell Lois about Kara, and things are just weird. Like, that's what's going on in my brain right now. And I'm like, wow, that's going to be a really, really hard situation. Granted, I don't know if we'll ever see Lois, but it would be interesting.
Yeah, I've been wondering if they're going to bring Lois in at any point. We've gotten direct references to her several times.
Yeah, and I do love me some Lois Lane. Sigh.
It'll be interesting to see. But so she has to forge a new path moving forward. But so this episode was the Red Tornado episode. An android, he's never been in live action before, and perhaps this episode kind of shows us why. So what did we think of how Red Tornado looked? Donya and I were very critical of the look when we started seeing first pictures. So what did we think?
I loved him. I thought he looked amazing.
I mean, for a guy painted as a red android, I thought it was fine. Maybe I'm desensitized by, you know, some of the awful CGI Once Upon a Time or something, that it doesn't bother me so much anymore. But, you know, it didn't like stick out, or I wasn't distracted by it.
I just couldn't get over how clearly his face had face paint on it, and it didn't look like a helmet. It looked like a guy with red face paint on. But I thought it was the same actor playing Red Tornado as playing Dr. Morrow.
So, oh, really? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, same guy.
Dang.
So I thought he did a very good job with all the very robotic movements. And so I was very impressed by that. I thought he did a good job of that. But I thought the costume looked like a bad cosplay, personally. So, but do we think that is the end of them? Well, Morrow, obviously, because Alex kills him, but Red Tornado becomes sentient at the end. So do we think, like, Kara blowing him up is it?
I think Doucheface there is going to get his hands on some tech and make his own Red Tornado.
He's going to pull a Malcolm Merlin at the end of the crossover and, like, pick up the ashes.
Look, don't even get me started on freaking Malcolm Merlin.
Oh, Malcolm.
So I bring this up just because Red Tornado and T.O. Morrow, yes, his name in the comics, his name is Dr. T.O. Morrow, ha ha ha, are actually fairly famous.
Sorry.
Morrow is a pretty big supervillain, and he creates Red Tornado and a bunch of other androids. And Red Tornado actually becomes a superhero and a member of the Justice League, and he trains like members of Young Justice. And so they're kind of big deal characters to be one-off appearances. So I was a little surprised that they blew up Red Tornado at the very end. So I hope he comes back, because there's a lot of potential there. Especially since he became sentient at the end.
That was so satisfying, though, seeing him blow up.
You're so violent today, Karen.
Come on, don't tell me you didn't love that. It was so good.
The scene with Kara, though, like having the flashbacks to Krypton and everything, I thought that was so well done.
Yeah, that's where the angry face came in. Like, she was just so, you could feel the rage, and I'm like, yeah, like, that's how you harness the rage, and I was totally into all of that, so yeah, I'm on board.
Awesome. So, Alex killed Dr. Morrow because they had, like, a telepathic connection, so Alex seemed really startled by having shot him. So do we think this maybe is the first time she's killed someone? Like, she killed the Helgramite, but the Helgramite was an alien, and this time she actually killed a human.
It wouldn't surprise me if this was the first, like, human person she was forced to kill. I'm sure that's not something she's had to deal with necessarily in the DEO. So I don't think I realized that or put that together. But yeah, I mean, I can imagine she hasn't had to worry or, you know, actively be the shooter in a situation like that before.
Yeah, so we'll see if that affects her moving forward, because she's got some plotline going on. Speaking of parental issues, it's all coming back to parents in this episode. So Kara and Alex get Wynn to hack into the DEO, and he's like, hey, this is treason. And they're like, hey, do it anyway, because of daddies. And he's like, damn it, I have daddy issues, and he does it. So what he ends up finding is some redacted files that kind of piece together a story that Jeremiah and another agent had gone to South America to confront a hostile alien, and then Jeremiah and the other agent disappeared, and then like a month later the other agent reappears but with no memories. And that other agent was Hank Henshaw. And Hank Henshaw was the one who deleted all the redacted files. So what exactly is going on? Oh, yeah. And Hank Henshaw still has his glowing red eyes.
Which they like to remind us of at the weirdest points. And I'm like, has nobody noticed his eyes glowing? Because it just randomly does it.
I know, he does it like he's walking among people and it's like glowing red eyes.
It's like, sir? Yeah.
Like, they might want to get that checked out. Like, somebody would have noticed by now, you would think.
Or it would be caught on camera or something. But so I'm starting to think that Jeremiah is alive. But what about you guys?
Yeah, I think that would be cool if he was. And would definitely add a different element to the story, because we've assumed he's been dead. And if he's like Hank, or maybe if he turned out differently, you know, what does that mean for the story, and what kind of relationship will Alex specifically, I mean, Alex and Kara, but Alex specifically have with him regarding that? I think it could be a cool twist.
Yeah, it's that whole, like, if there's, you know, if you don't see the body, like, it's hard to believe that he's truly dead. Like, in any good comic book or crime drama, like, you, it's hard to believe that the character is actually dead if you've never, you know, if you don't see it happen. So I will probably assume that he's living somewhere secretively and or is not himself or something until we get until it's cleared up about exactly what happened between him and Hank.
So I have a crazy theory for you. In the comic books, Hank Henshaw is Cyborg Superman. That's why I've been like, oh, that's why his eyes are glowing red. He's Cyborg Superman. What? But in the New 52, Hank Henshaw is not Cyborg Superman. Kara's father from Krypton is. He has amnesia, and he's being used by Brainiac as like a scout, and he's the Cyborg Superman. So my theory is, what if they took that and twisted it and made Jeremiah Cyborg Superman, and Hank is some kind of other, like, android-ish or something, and when they were captured, they were both changed into something, like, android-y.
Whoa.
It would definitely explain the red eyes.
So I'm just throwing that out there. We'll see. But throwing out some comic book theory, so we'll see how that happens. But kind of the last thing we see in this episode is that Kara's bleeding. She cuts herself on some glass. And the next episode is titled Human for a Day. So obviously that's going to go somewhere.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool, though. I'm excited for that plot.
So do we think she just, like, wore her powers out or something?
Well, you know, when things like this happen, I start thinking about all of the times in Smallville where Clark lost his powers for an hour, 10 hours, a day, a week, whatever. And there's usually some version of kryptonite involved. So I'm wondering if somehow, some way, during all of this Red Tornado stuff, she didn't come into contact with the kryptonite she's not familiar with, and maybe something affected her.
Yeah, that's my thought, too.
I just love how she's looking at the fear, like, I'm bleeding. And Kat was like, well, you cut yourself. What do you think is happening?
Stop staring at it like you've never seen blood before. Like,
but
yeah.
I haven't. All right, so any other thoughts on this episode?
Nope. Let's get into the Flash and Arrow.
All right. I feel like we can talk about these two kind of as a whole, since they were basically part one and part two.
Flaro, which is like my favorite new word.
Yeah. So this was Flaro, Legends of Today and Legends of Yesterday. I just wanted to start by saying that producer Greg Berlanti, who does all the DC shows, said that when they started the two crossovers, when they were writing them, their goal was to make the episode of Flash feel like an episode of Arrow, and to make the Arrow episode feel like an episode of Flash. And I thought they succeeded in doing that.
Yeah, when I read that statement, I think he tweeted it or something, I was surprised, and I was like, yeah, you know, I feel like they were successful, because it definitely felt like you were watching the other show on the opposite night a little bit. So it was a lot of good fun that way. I think that was a really smart way to kind of, a smart goal for them to have for the crossover.
Do we like that they made it so you had to watch both shows? Because last season... you really didn't need to watch both shows. Each story was pretty much self-contained, but this one, it was clearly part one, part two. So people who maybe don't watch The Flash had to, or people who don't watch Arrow had to get the full story.
Like, I don't really get people who don't watch both. And I'm not trying to be funny, because I'm just the kind of person that, like, if I'm in all the way. And I watch all of the superhero shows on television, whether, you know, I really like them or just think they're okay, because I feel like there's a complete story to be told there, whether or not they interact all the time. And The Flash and Arrow specifically, because they have such great crossover episodes, I just feel, in my mind, just feel like a single package. Like, they're a package deal together. And so I honestly, I don't really understand not watching both. But that's just me.
Yeah, all I could think of, like, after Arrow's hour was done, was I really hope they include both episodes in, like, DVD episode counts. Like, maybe count it as a two-hour episode and put them together for both Flash and Arrow, because if they just put the half on each season, it's going to be exactly that half, and it's going to feel kind of incomplete. So I hope they kind of think that through when they're packaging, like, DVDs next year.
That, or they'll just be like, well, guess you need to buy Arrow Season 4 as well as The Flash.
As if I wasn't going to, but I mean,
yeah, I think you should be watching them both, because they're both awesome. We had a tweet from one of our followers who said she doesn't like both of them. Oh, yeah, Sarah, Magic is Might, said, I don't like watching Arrow Flash crossovers because I don't like Arrow or care about those characters. So,
two words, Felicity Smoke. That's, no, I can't accept that you can't care about any of them. She's like my reason for existing. So, yeah. Okay. Moving on.
But I will concede that there was some very manufactured drama in that area this time.
Yeah. No, most definitely.
But I guess we can start with Vandal Savage, who in the comic books is this big, bad, immortal character who has been kind of manipulating events since, like, the beginning of time. He was a caveman, and he became immortal and got very hyper-intelligent and has been manipulating things from Julius Caesar to the Nazis. So he's all over the place. So did we like the actor, Casper Crump?
Wait, is that his real name?
Yes, it is.
That is amazing. Oh my God. I love him even more now. Yeah, actually, I did like him. I thought he was scary, which is important. And I thought he was just a smidge over the top, which I also think is important, because he's lived all these lives and he's definitely, like, ancient. So he's not going to talk the same way. He's not going to act the same way. And I thought they did a really good job of making him just a little bit ridiculous, but still terrifying.
Yeah, his look kind of reminded me a bit of Denethor from Lord of the Rings. And so that distracted me just a little bit. But I do agree. I think, you know, it's the, we've seen it with like Thor and Asgard. Like these are, you know, he's a guy who's been around for 4,000 years. Like he has to have some sort of otherworldly bigger presence. And he definitely did. So the actor was fine. He did a great job as far as I'm concerned.
All right. So just, I thought it was worth noting that they kind of make him another character in the Hawk Girl and Hawkman mythos. And because Vandal Savage is a separate character in the comics, but in the Hawk Girl and Hawkman mythos, they are the prince and the priestess, and they are murdered by the prince's rival named Hoth Set. And they call Vandal in the flashbacks Hoth Set at one point. So they make Vandal Savage Hoth Set in Egypt. So I thought that was kind of interesting that they took this character from that side of the mythos and made Vandal Savage actually that character to kind of fit the story. Except in the comic books, Hoth Set also is reincarnated and he goes to kill Hawk Girl and Hawkman in each lifetime, whereas Vandal just lives the whole time. But he's essentially serving the same function. So just a little background there. But his plot is pretty straightforward. He just wants to kill Hawk Girl and Hawkman because he gets more power when he kills them. So he's kind of an egomaniac with that. So he's after them and it takes a whole bunch of superheroes and multiple timelines to take him out. So overall thoughts on him, just do we like that he's going to be around for Legends of Tomorrow?
If you're going to have as many heroes on Legends of Tomorrow, you kind of have to have a bad guy as big and like all-encompassing as Vandal Savage to challenge them. And so I think he's going to be an interesting like bad guy for them to face down on and like face down with and have to like travel through time to find and all of that fun stuff. Like I think that's going to be really interesting. And I hope they use that like as like an arc, like the bigger arc. So we'll see. But I think it's going to be interesting.
My only concern is how long can they do this for? How long can he be the bad guy of that series? You know, is it going to be 5 seasons and they still haven't stopped him yet? Or do they have to stop him like 207 times? Is it going to get old? How are they going to keep legends alive? Which, you know, we're just going to have to wait and watch and see what happens. But I'm curious.
Yeah, there have been a whole bunch of rumors floating around about like season 2, but there's nothing that's been confirmed. But I would not be surprised if each one is a little self-contained, like seasons are self-contained. So he's the bad guy just for season 1. And then we do something new, maybe with a new cast of characters for season 2.
Hmm.
But all theories, we don't know anything yet.
Yeah.
So I was actually very surprised that they killed him in the second timeline. Because
yeah.
They confront him and then everything goes to shit. Pardon my French, but it does. And he kills everybody but Barry. And Barry runs back in time. And Oliver tells him to run, Barry, run. Your favorite line. So he travels back through time and they fix everything that goes wrong. And they manage to kill him. And knowing that he was the villain on Legends of Tomorrow, I was like, how did you kill him? I was so shocked. And then Malcolm, anyone who listens to this podcast knows, I hate him more than I hate Grant Ward. I love John Barrowman, but now I can't stand the sight of him on my TV. I'm sad.
That's unfortunate.
So I'm just like, Malcolm Merlyn, you are the worst. So Malcolm comes and is like gathering up the ashes. And I'm like, you don't have a Lazarus pit anymore. So how are you going to bring him back? So somehow Malcolm is going to use his League of Assassins-ness to bring back Vandal Savage for Legends of Tomorrow. So hey, Malcolm, screw you.
Yeah, it's like Malcolm no longer has a Lazarus pit. Now he has a Lazarus waterfall. Mwahaha, I'm taking this back. Like, that's, like, Malcolm, he's not my favorite. I do love Barrowman, but yeah.
Oh, he's the worst. He's so awful. But, so Vandal's dead, but sorry, guys, not for long. Because we have an entire season and series to go with him. So that's Vandal. But the whole thing starts when he attacks Kendra when she's on a date with Cisco, and they're like, we need help because he's crazy. So Barry and Cisco bring Kendra to Star City, and Barry rescues everybody from Damien Dark, which is a hilarious sequence.
Oh my god, Damien Dark is like, well, that was interesting.
I love him so much. He's like my favorite villain they've ever had. I love him.
Yeah, I agree. He's absolutely fantastic and thoroughly entertaining.
I just love, he's like, whoa! Like, the top impressed reaction. I loved it. And it was just like this tiny moment, and it was a highlight. So, and then poor Diggle, who pukes after Barry rescues him. He's like, every time. And Thea, who's, did I know we knew the Flash? We know the Flash. I didn't know we knew the Flash. Just like, oh, poor Thea. So basically the point is here, we get some really amazing superhero interactions of people who some have interacted before and some who haven't. And basically it's generally amazing and full of wonderful one-liners. So were there any favorite combinations that we had of these two teams coming together in either episode?
Cisco scolding Felicity for using the wrong type of wire in their setup might have been like one of the great, because Felicity, like, I love her little fluster, and like she's like, it never happens. It might have happened last week or yesterday. Yeah, it happened yesterday. Like, it's so great, and I love seeing Cisco fired up. So that was really, really fun.
Oh man, I think they're all really fantastic. Cisco is always a highlight for me. I love how he accidentally said Barry's name and they were like, well, crap. But you know what? I think I'm gonna have to go with Barry and Oliver, because the last time we saw them together, obviously they ended on good terms, but they were sort of at each other's throats a lot, and which is fine because they were getting to know each other and they were both a little bit like, well, my way's right. And this time they work together, and that whole little like, I got this, Ollie, and then he's like, run, Barry, run. And I was like, they're friends. And it's so nice to see them not have to compete with each other, but have to work together.
Oliver not liking that Barry had a drink named in his honor. Well, maybe if you'd save Star City, you'd get your own drink.
I also did love the "it's your city" throwbacks. Like, I love that. That was good fun.
I like too when Barry is telling Kendra not to let Oliver train her. He's like, when it rains, I still feel what you shot me with those arrows. So good callback there. I didn't choose it as my favorite line, so I'm just going to bring it up here when Cisco and Thea are talking, and Cisco's trying to rename Thea, and she's like, maybe you should get a haircut. And he's like, I think you're just mad because my conditioner game is on point.
Cisco had consistently some of the best lines over both hours of this. Like, he's always good, but I feel like they stepped it up a notch because he was just on fire.
And you know what? He felt like the central point of both episodes. Like, obviously Barry and Oliver are our heroes, and at the end of the day, it's going to be up to them, and it's going to be up to the team of superheroes who can go out and fight. But Cisco, in a lot of ways, was behind the scenes making sure everything went smoothly, because yeah, he's the tech guy, but he's also the one that was talking to Kendra to make sure that she understood how her powers worked and what she needed to do to activate them. And he brought everyone together to help protect her. And we don't see him in the spotlight like that all the time. Sometimes it's just the funny one-liner, or like he's the one that, you know, brings the answers to Barry, who then goes off to fight the bad guy. And he felt so pivotal that it was really nice, because I love Cisco so much.
That's a good point. He very much was at the center of pretty much everything.
Go Cisco.
And we loved it. So more, yes. Cisco.
All the love for Cisco. I love him.
And his hair.
Because his conditioner game is on point. Okay, so this kind of two-parter served to introduce Vandal Savage, but also Hawkman and Hawk Girl. So we'll start with Hawkman. What did we think?
Kind of a douche, but a well-meaning, yes. Douche. He's a well-meaning douche. I think it's because he has this long history With, how do you say her actual name? Is it Shiara? Shiara. He has such a long history with her, and obviously he got his memories back first, and he's aware of their entire situation. So he's sort of like, okay, you know, we need to do this again. Snap, snap. Let's just hurry up. So yeah, he's kind of a douche, but I really do think he means well, and obviously he does care about her. And he is a good guy, and I think that's important. So he's different from what I thought he was going to be. I really thought that both of them were going to be a bit more like ancient and, I don't know, ridiculous. And they kind of weren't. And it worked out really well. So I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, I think the word that kept coming to my mind is he's just impatient because he's done this 200 times. So I kind of gave him a pass because he's just basically waiting for her to figure it out and, you know, come back around so that they can protect each other. So I kind of, yeah, he was a bit of a douche, but I understood why.
Did anyone else have a little bit of a problem that they had so many white people in their Egypt flashback?
I was wondering about that, too.
I made some mental gymnastics, but I'm not sure I should give them the benefit of the doubt for it. Like, I mean, they've proven that they are not opponents of diversity. They race bend good in the good ways of making characters who were traditionally white not white in the show. So I feel like I should give them the benefit of the doubt. But I was like, you know, both Vandal and Hawkman are white. The actors are white. They're both European. And then we're like, and we're making them Egyptians. I noticed it. I was like, I'm not sure how they would get around that. Because if they wanted to be like, they look different in every lifetime, it would be confusing to cast other actors.
Yeah. But
at the same time, it's like, you have white people in ancient Egypt, which is like all the controversy with that Egypt movie that's coming out.
And the one before it that did the same thing.
Yeah. So I was a little cringy at that, but... yeah, I thought he was a total douche too. And poor Cisco was like, I'm just gonna go do some push-ups. Oh, but yeah, so. And then there's Kendra. She kind of finally comes into her own. She starts getting her memories back and she doesn't want to admit it, but finally does. And she gives them the final missing piece that they need. And this is all after Hawkman has like pushed her off a building. So, you know, all good times. So I'm not enamored with the actress, but I don't know about you guys.
I am. I totally am. I think she's so pretty and she has awesome hair and I think she's a great actress. And I really like the way that she portrays her as this strong yet vulnerable kind of person. And I love the fact that, you know, it's a warrior priestess and that even though she was devoted to the gods, she still knew that sometimes she had to use violence to do the right thing. And I think it's this really great balance of characteristics. And did I mention she has really cool hair? Because I really like her hair.
Yeah, I had my reservations after we first met her on Flash. Like, she got the job done. It wasn't distractingly bad, like I've seen on some shows. But I was a little reserved because I wasn't sure how this was going to work out. Ultimately, I think she did a great job. I didn't have any huge issues. But yeah, I can see you're holding back a little, Caitlin, because she wasn't immediately impressive like Grant was with Barry and, you know, like some of the others that have stepped in and just kind of shown up and blown me away. So I do like her, and I think I'll like her more now that she's kind of accepted her role as Kiara, however you say it. And I think she'll be better on Legends of Tomorrow. So I'm excited to see more from them.
I don't want to say that she's not beautiful because she's beautiful. I just think she was probably the weakest actress on screen.
Yeah.
For me. So I was kind of cringing, especially during the flashbacks. I was like, ooh, she's kind of a weak actress, but she is very pretty. So she was kind of not the best for me. Speaking of not the best, we have the Olicity drama because Oliver finds out he has a son and Felicity goes kind of in the first timeline, Oliver finds out, and then because he has Barry run a DNA test. And then he goes and confronts the mother, and Felicity goes behind his back to get the DNA tests, and they have a fight, and they kind of seem like they broke up, basically. And then timeline erased because everybody died, but the issue still remains, and Barry has to tell Oliver, hey, congratulations, you're a dad, it's a boy. And he keeps it from her this time, which not good move, because Barry's like, dude, you need to tell her, because messing with time is a terrible idea. So what did we think about this drama going on?
I don't even want to talk about it. That's how much I'm just not into it at all. I think it's dumb.
My biggest problem is I don't understand why his baby mama insists that he lie to his girlfriend. Like, that just seems like crazy woman problem. Like, why is she doing that? It makes no sense. Like, yeah, I can understand she wants it to stay private. Like, she doesn't want it to be a thing. He is still Oliver Queen. But him telling Felicity that he has a kid and he says, you're not going to be able to meet him because, you know, his mother wants this to be a private thing. But Felicity's not crazy. Like, she's going to understand. And so it bugs me, A, that the mom put him in that situation to begin with. B, I don't know why he doesn't tell Felicity anyway. Like, again, she's not crazy. If he explains the situation to her, she's going to understand that it's, you know, it happened a long time ago. It's something that he's just now finding out about, and she'll go with the flow. So it doesn't make any sense as to why he would keep the secret from her.
Yeah, and even during their fight, she's like, I'm not mad about the kid. I'm mad that you're lying about it. Because,
like, why lie?
That's Oliver's problem, and he's really turned over a new leaf, but something gets shady and he reverts, which is not a good sign. But I feel like it's very manufactured, the ultimatum of don't tell anybody about this. Like, I can understand, like, Oliver's got a crazy life and she doesn't even know the half of it. She just knows Oliver Queen. She does not even know the rest of it. So I don't blame her on that account, but I feel like the whole, you could never tell anyone ever, and you'll never get to see him if you dare tell anybody. Like, it feels very manufactured just because, oh, they've had too good of a relationship through this part of the season. Like, really?
Yeah, pretty much.
There are more organic ways to bring up drama, and I don't feel like this is one of them. And we know it's going to rear its ugly head at some point, as we said in the news. So, and I imagine it's going to get worse because time does not like being messed with. So not good there, but we'll move on because Karen is very unhappy about that. So any other side effects we think we might see because of all the time travel? When the producers were asked, they're like, I guess you should just watch more episodes of Arrow to see. Ha ha ha. So anything else we think we might be seeing?
Like, I'm trying to think of exactly what changed and things that didn't change. And yeah, I mean, the obvious one would be something going on between Oliver and Felicity because of all of that. That's the obvious, you know, ploy for the show to use.
Everybody not dying. That's a big one.
Right. Yeah.
Central City blowing up.
But that's literally everyone besides Barry. So it's like, where do you go with that? Like, each person could have something come up because they're still alive in the new timeline. Like, I don't know how they would handle something that massive, you know?
Any thoughts, Karen?
No, I'm just stressed. I'm stressed about it. These things, like, yeah, they stress me out. And I'm like, if everyone just was good to begin with, we wouldn't have these problems. But, you know, where's the conflict in that?
Exactly. So I imagine something really catastrophic is going to happen. And with Damien Dark in town, that's probably a good guess.
This also makes me wonder if Barry time traveling on Earth 1 affects Earth 2 at all. Like, I wonder how things or people or things might change in that world as well. Like, I have no idea, but it could be, you know, could have an effect. You never know.
I mean, if there's people from Earth 1 getting thrown into Earth 2 as a result of the time travel, it would change, I imagine.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of like Barry and Sisko when they were like, maybe if knowing that you time travel will change the present, which will change the future. And Barry's got like this horrified look on his face. Like, what? I'm like, that's how I feel when you guys start talking about time travel.
I really liked it when Oliver was like, you know, my world just got really crazy. I thought metahumans were the worst thing that could happen. And now we've got like magic and time travel and all this stuff. And you could just, he's kind of done with it, and he's like, Okay, I guess I can accept that now. Why not?
I liked when Barry was just like, my life is weirder than yours. I was like, it's true.
Just accept it. It's true.
But kind of the last thing was we had a side plot in the episode of Flash about the Harrison Wells, Harry, as Cisco likes to call him, and Caitlin worked together to create a serum to temporarily increase Barry's speed because Zoom, they're estimating, is like 3 to 4 times faster than Barry. So, and he's not really speeding up despite some training. So they're creating the serum and they want to test it on Jay because he's had the speed force in him. And Jay, I have missed your face. Thank you for being back on my TV, even for a short period of time. I like him very much. But he is not here for it. He is, like, not okay. Like, Speed Force is not about science. And they're like, hey, you got your powers from a lab accident. And so did Barry. So it kind of is. And he's not okay with that response. So what do we think about the serum, first of all? Good idea? Bad idea?
I mean, I feel like it's going to have some consequences.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I don't know what to think. Like, it, you know, Wells and Caitlin are involved in the creation of it. So you want to think that it's not all bad, but you don't know what consequences, again, consequences, always consequences. you don't know what is going to come of it or, you know, what could happen because of it. So until we see Jay Garrick being totally fine 5 episodes from now, like, we won't know, you know, what the after effects are either.
Why do we think Jay was so violently opposed to it?
I'm assuming because something happened on Earth 2 regarding the same thing.
You mean he's not just a Speed Force purist? Like, in its purest form, you cannot replicate.
Because he was, like, really not okay with this. Like,
yeah.
More than just, like, I don't like you, Harrison Wells kind of reaction. It was, like, a really... He was really mad about it. So, but he ends up having to take it because Patty sees Harry, follows him to Star Labs, and shoots him. Oops. So, part one, Jay has to take the serum to phase through Wells' body because he's got a bullet that's medical mumbo jumbo. Taking it out saves his life. So, he has to take the serum and saves Wells' life, and they have kind of a nice moment where Wells actually thanks him, which I'm sure was probably painful for him to do. And then Jay is like, well, if you're really thankful, keep that away from Barry. And I'm like, that's not going to happen. So do we think he'll respect Jay's wishes?
No.
No.
Just throwing it out there, I don't think he will, because Wells is so shady. Like, he's almost as shady as his Earth One version. I don't trust him even a little bit.
Nope.
Especially after all the Gorilla Grodd stuff. I don't trust him even remotely.
I was happy to get a little bit of Patty because I love her. And
oh, Patty.
It was just nice to see her involved, even though it's a crazy crossover and they could have just left her out for an episode. You know, I was glad we did get her involved a little.
So speaking of Patty, who I also love, this is going to, like, she's probably going to be like, okay, you need to give me some answers at this point, because she is like, why is Harrison Wells alive? Why are you harboring him? Why is Joe involved? How does Barry fit into this? Like, she's a good detective, even though she's kind of new at it. So she's going to want some answers.
Yeah, and I think it was Caitlin who said, didn't Joe explain this to you? And I was like, what do you expect Joe to have explained to her yet? Like, I was kind of a little confused, but clearly Caitlin, you know, would have thought that Patty was a little bit more in the know or something. It sounded like that. So, yeah, Patty's definitely going to have some questions.
Yeah.
Maybe Barry will take his own advice and just tell her his secret, like Oliver should have done.
Yeah, exactly. Because Patty's, like, the only person on Earth who doesn't know that Barry is the Flash. Even Malcolm Merlyn knows. I mean, come on.
Be a good example, Barry. Yeah. Be a good example.
I really want Patty to find out because she's adorable and I like her and Barry a lot.
Agreed. I love them.
And I want more of them together.
Mm-hmm.
So any more feels on the crossover? Do we think they did they outdo last season?
Yes. Oh my God, yes. These two episodes are probably my favorite episodes of Flash and Arrow, period.
Wow.
Yeah, I really liked them.
I can't say I love them that much because Aaron absolutely loves them. No, I really, really liked these episodes. I do think they outdid last year's. Maybe it's because they were all working together and you weren't doing the Ollie versus Barry thing. But I just think it really worked for them all to kind of gang up and take on something this big all together. And all of the interplay between them was fabulous. I don't think anything will ever top the Felicity Smoke episode from last year. The something origin, secret origin of Felicity Smoke. That will probably be my favorite episode ever, but that's because she's awesome. So yeah, but I really, really liked this one.
Yeah, I think it was, I liked that the stories weren't self-contained because it sort of felt like, okay, that was nice last season. I enjoyed it, but they were two just episodes that featured each set of characters, whereas this one was like squad goals, basically. So yeah, good stuff. So that was our week in television. We are getting towards mid-season finale time. So I think all but Supergirl have their mid-season finales next week. And I'm not sure when Supergirl goes on break, if at all. So
never. Never leave our screens ever.
We will keep up with that. But so shall we move on to movies? We've got some just brief news to talk about in the movies, and then we'll wrap things up. So first things first. Civil War stuff, which Karen is very excited about, hashtag Team Tony, is we're getting some more news out of Civil War. EW has a big Civil War issue, and they're talking about Black Panther, first of all. We saw a couple shots of him in the trailer, but we haven't heard much else. So the article from EW kind of talks about how Black Panther's sort of not on anybody's side in the whole thing. So he's not really Team Cap or Team Iron Man. He's more Team Wakanda, seems like, which makes sense. So he's kind of there with his own motivations, kind of what I got out of this, that without the motivations, it seems like he and Steve would be friends. But with the whole situation that's going on, they end up at odds. But Black Panther is in there for his own reasons. So are we looking forward to seeing how he plays into everything?
Yes. I'm like doing the Shia LaBeouf like double fist pumping excited gif thing. I'm so excited for Black Panther. And like I said last time I was on, I don't even know why. I don't even know anything about him, but I just think he looks super badass. And just his costume in general looks incredible. And the fact that he can outrun Cap just really has me super intrigued. So I am here for anything Black Panther.
Yeah, pretty much everything's Karen said. Like, I don't really know much about Black Panther, so I'm really excited to see how they're going to use him and what exactly is his deal. So should be really, really fun. Plus, I'm going to need a character to not be completely, like, anti one or the other. Like, if he's kind of got his own agenda, I think that's going to be a good thing.
Yeah, they kind of talked about how they were kind of just being like, we need to do Black Panther at some point, and they don't want to just kind of play lip service to the character, so they really wanted to make a full, rounded character with some kind of arc in the movie. So it sounds like he should have a pretty good feature in the film. So be excited for Black Panther, I guess, is the takeaway at this point. So also speaking of Civil War, Scarlett Johansson talked a little bit about Black Widow, basically saying that kind of by the time Civil War rolls around, she says, I don't think she, meaning Natasha, has ever aspired to become an Avenger. That's not really a choice she made, but she's finally capable of making a choice for herself at this point, which is kind of a milestone in someone's life when they're not really participated in the decisions that were made for them. She's finally at a place where she's going, okay, I actually kind of know what I want, and I think I kind of deserve it. So that's positive to hear. Always here for giving some Natasha agency, which she was lacking a bit in Age of Ultron. And they're saying there's really not going to be much in the way of romance. So also a plus. I mean, romance outside of Cap and Bucky, I think, is what we mean.
I mean, it felt so forced in Age of Ultron because it felt like they felt it should be there. And it wasn't really necessary. So I'm totally fine with that not being a thing. There's plus, enough going on in Civil War and enough people showing up.
Exactly. That's my point. I'm like, there'd be no room for it at all. And I think it's more important to focus on the story than contriving some sort of romance just to have a romantic element to the story. It's just not necessary.
She also says something interesting that Natasha and Tony are actually trying to save Steve in their own way, because if they can't stop the track that he's on, the government's just going to take him out. So they're kind of trying to help him in their own way, which I thought was an interesting way to look at the conflict between the two of them as well. And knowing where the comic book takes that story is kind of interesting. So I'm just ready for it to be May.
I'm ready for it to be after May because I want to have seen the movie, but I don't want the pain to be so fresh.
But I mean, I guess it depends on how many times and how frequently you've seen it at that point. Because it might just be refreshing it.
I'll just watch it until I'm numb.
All right, so Civil War coming in May, and undoubtedly there will be plenty of more news because they're ramping up all the promotional stuff in the next few months. Also on the Marvel end, Thor Ragnarok has a new screenwriter, so taking over from two other screenwriters. So we're on to the third, which doesn't bode well, I feel like. But on the plus side, we have a female writer, Stephanie Folsom. So we don't have a whole lot of female writers in the Marvel universe. So I feel like that will hopefully be a plus. She doesn't have a whole lot of credits to her name. She wrote the 2013 Blacklist scripts, 1969, A Space Odyssey, or How Kubrick Learned to Stop Worrying and Land on the Moon, which I kind of love as a title for a script. But other than that, it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot to judge her on. So just basically another new writer for Thor Ragnarok. So okay then.
I always feel like when you get writers, especially for like Marvel stuff, that don't have a lot of stuff for us to know them from, like the resume isn't as extensive. I feel like those people had a really like good grasp of what they want to tell. Like they usually have a better grasp of the story they want to tell because they had to pitch something to get the job. So I feel like that always, you know, bodes well for things that she must have had a really great way to tell the Thor Ragnarok story that they obviously want told. Like she had to have a good grasp on it to get the job. So I'm hoping, cross my fingers.
We shall see. That one's not coming out till 2017. So there's a little more time for that one, but not a whole lot else to say there. So I guess we can move on to DC. These are both Batman v Superman related. We got first a very short teaser clip that Donnie wanted us to make sure we said very much had 50 Shades of Grey vibes as Superman had like his army has captured Batman and Superman like walks ominously down the hall and is like, my tastes are very specific, Mr. Wayne, as he pulls the mask off. I mean, he doesn't actually say that, but that's kind of how it comes across. So there was that. It's a thing that happened. But then we got a full trailer. So that's kind of where I wanted to focus our discussion on that. So thoughts on the trailer for Batman v Superman?
I have thoughts. Would you like to hear my thoughts?
I would love to hear your thoughts, Karen.
Guess what? I really liked it.
What?
I know. So just in case you guys have not heard me say previously, I hated Man of Steel. I think Batman versus Superman, I don't want to say is stupid because I think it's the idea of it is incredible and it's pitting two huge superheroes against each other. But because I really did not like Man of Steel and because they chose a new Batman, I'm just really not into it, honestly, until they brought out Wonder Woman. And then I was like, sat up in my chair and I was all intrigued. This trailer was the absolute first time I was actually interested in the story. I think it was really cool seeing Clark Kent and Bruce Wayne stand next to each other, kind of facing off in a very subtle, but there's a little hint of like the oncoming violence coming there. They actually cracked a couple of jokes that were laugh out loud funny. Wonder Woman comes in and saves the day, and I was just like, yes, this is amazing. And also Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor. is so ridiculous. I don't know if he's going to be, like, the highlight of the movie or if he's just going to make the entire movie, like, blow up because he is just so out there. But I'm kind of looking forward to it because he is so ridiculous.
Kristen, how did you feel?
Yeah. I am not as anti Batman vs Superman as others may be. It's not, I know it's not going to be the greatest movie ever. I'm not like in denial. And I saw Man of Steel and I liked it for what it was. It was not the greatest Superman movie ever made. You know, like I'm not an idealist. But I did like that they're not going to completely ignore all of the crazy destruction from Man of Steel in this movie. Like, they're going to kind of address that, and it's going to kind of be a jumping off point. And I like Wonder Woman so far. Like, I love what they've kind of done with her. I don't know where her character's going to fit into all this crazy, but I loved her in the trailer. And I'm not as anti-Ben Affleck as a lot of the world is either. So, you know, I'm okay with it. It's not my most anticipated movie, but I'll go see it. So that's basically where I'm at.
You know, the more I see him in that role, the more I'm getting into it. Like, this whole, you know, a little bit of silver hair, a little bit older Batman type of thing. Like, I'm really starting to warm up to it.
Oh, you mean there was something besides Wonder Woman in this trailer? I didn't even notice.
She's so amazing.
I mean, I noticed her and Jesse Eisenberg's wig. So.
Oh, it's so awful.
I'm going to continue using this analogy because it fits that he took the wig, Oliver's wig, from season one of Arrow.
Yeah.
You'd think that they had a better budget than that, but apparently not. And I could not deal with him in this trailer. Like, you do not want to pick a fight with this person. I was like, who talks like that?
It's so bad, but I'm so ready for it. Like, that's the weird part.
I watched it and I was like, well, that was a thing that happened. Okay. And I'm still not excited for it. I'm still going to go see it. I also am kind of into the Ben Affleck at this point. I'm intrigued to see where they go, but I really hated Man of Steel. So we'll see. I just cannot handle Jesse Eisenberg at this point because that I can't do it. The wig and like the weird voice that he's got going. And
yeah,
I don't even know. That's not hashtag not my Lex.
Yeah, I was going to say Michael Rosenbaum will always be my Lex. It's just how it is. But, you know,
my Lex is from the animated versions from the early 2000s from like Justice League. And he's not that Lex.
Nope. But I have absolutely no expectations for Eisenberg. Like, I don't know if he's going to be awful, great, ridiculous, laughable. Like, I have no idea. So literally, this was the first, you know, time we've really seen much from him at all. And it was ridiculous. So who knows? Who knows where it'll go? Who knows what happens once he's bald? Nobody knows.
We got a lot about the plot of this one, though. Like, we saw a shot of Zod, and then I was like, whoa, okay. So they're giving us a whole lot, like, Zod and then Doomsday and everybody fighting Doomsday. I'm like, okay, we pretty much know what this movie is about.
Yeah. I was going to say, all the fangirls and boys were probably like, oh my God, Doomsday was so amazing. And I'm just like, Wonder Woman was there for 2 seconds, but she's awesome.
I'm not going to lie, I was not impressed by the Doomsday effects.
Me neither.
So it looked kind of like the CW. But, I mean, the Flash makes Grodd look that good, and then your Doomsday looks like that.
Yeah.
On a huge budget. I'm not
hopefully
amazingly
it's
impressed.
Just trailer syndrome. Like, hopefully it's just a little rough because it's the trailer. Who knows?
We can hope. But when the CW has better effects and wigs than you do, you've got a problem, I feel like. So, but we'll see where that's going. All right, so that's all our movie news. So why don't we move on to quotes of the week. Kristen, would you like to go first?
I will absolutely go first. Mine is between Felicity and Oliver. I just totally, like, mashed their names in a new way, which totally works. And it's when Felicity says, in her Oliver voice, "Felicity, the magnetic arrow gag will never work." "Ha! Yes, it will, my love, because I am really smart. And guess what, Oliver? It did work." And then Oliver chimes in and says, "Felicity, honey, it's a little hard to fight with you doing that in my ear." I love these two, and I love their intercom banter, and this was just another example of them being awesome. So
I love when they're lovey toward each other with other people around, because it's just so comfortable, and it's amazing.
It's just so not what you expect from Oliver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, honey. He's like being off being a superhero. He's like, honey. Okay, Oliver. Yeah. Karen, would you like to share your quote of the week?
Yes. It's it's from the Batman versus Superman trailer. I'm telling you, this movie, this trailer really brought me around. I mean, I'm not 100% there, but I am much more excited than I ever was before. And I think it starts off with Batman saying, "Is she with you?" And then Superman going, "I thought she was with you." And it's about Wonder Woman. And I laughed out loud. Like, I thought that was just brilliant.
She's showing up to save the day.
Yep.
Because the boys are incompetent and they need Wonder Woman.
They're too busy fighting each other. She knows the real problem here.
Yeah. My quote of the week was from The Flash and Barry being so done with Malcolm Merlyn, because Malcolm has a couple of times where he just like shows up with his lackeys like out of the shadows. And the second time he does it, Barry just goes, "Is that the only way this guy knows how to enter a room?" Barry was on fire with his one-liners. I was loving it, but I was like, he is as done with Malcolm as I am, because later he has that line about like your friend with the ring. Like, he is not here for Malcolm, and I loved everything about it. I also quite enjoyed when they had their meeting with Vandal Savage and he had the line about like, "Did you rehearse that in the mirror?"
Yes.
And Vandal was like, "Ha ha ha," and then like his face drops, which I thought was hilarious.
Oh my god, it was so, he like didn't know what to say, so he just kind of walked away.
Oh, good times. These are very quotable episodes. I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we'll move on to Comic Corner. Since Johnny is not here, she did not come up with a rec list, but we are going to each come up with a rec for you of a comic book. So Karen, I know you have a lot of feels for your rec, so why don't you go first?
Yeah, I don't know if I was supposed to pick like a specific issue or volume, but guess what? I'm just picking all of Ms. Marvel because it's amazing. This is the new Ms. Marvel with Kamala Khan. She's awesome. She's just like you and me. She writes fan fiction about the Avengers, and she freaks out and takes selfies with Wolverine, and there's literally nothing not to love about her. So if you just like really relatable characters with some good jokes and a very modern sort of, like, yeah, relatable kind of setting and story, check out Ms. Marvel. It's awesome.
Perfect. Kristen, what about you?
I have never been, like, a really big comic book reader. I've always watched comic book movies and TV shows. The Adam West Batman was, like, my show growing up. So I've kind of started diving into the comic book thing, and I picked up the Supergirl New 52 Volume 1 a couple of months ago, actually. And I'm slowly working my way through Volume 1. I think I have Volumes 2 and 3 as well. And I'm really, really enjoying getting to know more about Supergirl, because I know a lot of the backstory for the big, you know, the big characters like Spider-Man and Superman and Batman, but I never really knew much about her. So I'm really enjoying getting to know more about Kara. It's a really, really interesting first look, like, especially with the show and all that. And it's really, really brilliantly drawn. Like, I've loved the first volume, so I'm looking forward to diving into the rest.
Awesome. So my rec is something that I've been meaning to dive into for a while, but I mentioned before, but I have not been able to talk enough about my love of the Batman Beyond series that aired in 1999 to 2001. It's an incredible show that started as a series. It wasn't a comic adaptation, and then it was later adapted into comics. So it's about basically 40 years in the future. It takes place in 2039, which is 40 years from when the series starts. Really old Bruce Wayne mentors a young teenager named Terry McGinnis as the new Batman in Neo-Gotham. So it's kind of futuristic, and kind of together, Terry and Bruce are being Batman and saving the city from foes and all that stuff. Terry is one of my favorite comic book characters ever, and I don't know how they've never done a live action adaptation of Batman Beyond, because you still get Bruce. He's just very old and crotchety instead of being younger and crotchety, so there's that. But they have done comic adaptations of Batman Beyond, so they did a couple of comics that kind of focused on just like what happens in the series, and then there's a standalone movie that follows. But I picked up the comics that kind of pick up after the series and those comics end. So the first one is Batman Beyond Hush Beyond. So that kind of looks at some of Batman's older villains, and Terry's fighting someone who's murdering old Batman villains. And then I just finished reading Industrial Revolution, which is some more stories that includes the future Justice League, and then a story about the Wayne Company and how it's kind of power struggles going on there. There's a whole bunch of plot lines with that in the animated series. But if you like Batman at all, I highly recommend you watch Batman Beyond the show and then read some of the comics. There are a bunch more comics that I'm delving into, but those are the first two that I would start. If you have already seen the show and want more Terry McGinnis in your life, as you should, because he's wonderful. So start with Hush Beyond and then move on to Industrial Revolution. So that is my rec. All right. So feedback. We got a fair amount of feedback this week, so thank you guys for that. We really appreciate it. We got some comments on Hypeable. First, Michael Gustini was commenting on our episode about the Civil War trailer discussion. Karen, you were there. So he said, great episode. Love the Civil War trailer discussion. I highly recommend checking out Gotham. So we had a question about whether we would consider Gotham, and Donnie and I were like, we dropped it. Sorry. So I highly recommend checking out Gotham. It's unlike any other superhero show on TV right now and embraces the insanity and wackiness of the Batman universe. Penguin and Riddler alone are reasons enough to watch it. Also, I myself am rooting for Wynn and Kara on Supergirl. I really feel for the guy, and I can't tell if Kara knows about his feelings but is afraid to confront him about it in fear of ruining their friendship, or if she really is just that oblivious. I mean, the poor guy might as well be wearing a sign saying, I love you, Kara. What can I say? I love an underdog love story. Plus, the Jimmy Kara stuff is really boring and predictable to me. And I have not positive feelings about Wynn for the most part, so I can't say I agree with that. Any thoughts on that, guys?
Jeremy Jordan is adorable and I love him. And so by extension, I love Wynn, even though we don't really know much about him yet. So it's kind of hard to have a really strong opinion on him, I feel like. But I am definitely interested in learning more about Wynn before I really settle on whether Jimmy or Wynn is better for Kara, because I like them both. And I'm just here for the whole show, so I'm happy either way.
Agreed.
All right. Karen, would you like to read the first comment from Cassie?
Yes, I would. Cassie Drake says, in regards to Gotham, I too couldn't get into it last season. It was just too ridiculous and I couldn't keep myself interested in it on a week-to-week basis. However, it became available on Netflix over the summer, once I was able to binge watch it and not have to try to remember the plot points one week at a time. I came to embrace its ridiculousness and campiness and cheesiness. Now I love it and gladly tune in each week. It's still not my favorite show, but it has earned itself a spot in my heart. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. didn't have the fastest or best first season. It was only through binge watching that I was able to overcome its flaws. Season 2 of Gotham really is much better. I urge you to give the show another chance. And I agree 100%.
Yeah, I too gave up on Gotham halfway through season 2. Or season 1, I really liked the premise of the show, and when I saw the pilot at SDCC last year, I loved it, and I just fell out of, like, it just wasn't keeping my attention, and when I moved in with Karen this summer, I was told I needed to watch Gotham, and so I did, and I'm glad I did, because I'm loving the Penguin and Nygma stuff. Like, it's really great, and I would be sad if I missed all of the crazy Nygma love. Like, I really love him, and that's crazy because he's psychotic. So, you know, it's the following syndrome all over again. But I do really, really love the characterization they've come up with for them.
Rip the following. I also wanted to mention that I wrote an article about why I'm mad at Jim Gordon right now. So if anybody is interested in reading that because you watch Gotham, please check it out and leave some comments. Let me know how you feel, because I think he's being dumb, but I still love him.
Donnie and I can't make any promises about catching up on Gotham because neither of us particularly liked it. And when Legends of Tomorrow premieres, we're going to have 5 shows to recap every episode. But we'll see. We're never going to say never, but there's a whole lot of television on right now. Kristen, would you like to read Cassie's other comment? Cassie was very chatty this week, which we always encourage you to be.
Absolutely. Her second comment says, after watching this week's episode of Supergirl, I no longer ship Jimmy and Kara. After seeing how Lucy's father treated Jimmy and treated her decision to be with him, I do not want anything to happen to prove him right. That was in all caps, in case you were wondering. If they break up, it totally has to be because of Lucy's decision, not influenced by James' friendship with Kara or Supergirl or anything else girl related. Stupid old man Lane. Very, very sad face. I completely agree at this point. I want, if Jimmy and Kara do have some, you know, ill-fated thing coming down the pike, I don't even know. I feel like it has to happen separately from the Lucy storyline, because they did set up all of this crazy with her dad, and I want Lucy to, you know, I'm on her side now. I get why things have kind of happened the way they have. So I definitely agree with you that Lucy needs to have good things happen.
I feel like this show is so hyper aware of its importance to women that it wouldn't go down that kind of route. It's just, it's so aware of itself and the stories that it's telling. So I would be very surprised if was the route that they took with that. Like, I still ship it. I don't feel like it's mutually exclusive to ship Jimmy and Kara and not want to prove Sam Lane right. So, because he was a total D-bag. So no denying that. All right, so we got a few tweets as well. We got a video from Kim, who had sent us a video of Cisco's best moments from The Flash, season 1. This makes me smile. So much love for Cisco, she says. So we'll retweet that, because as we proved in this episode, we love Cisco so much, and he has so many wonderful moments, and Cisco's the best. So all the love for Cisco. Karen, you want to take Melissa's?
Yes. At Melissa J. Cumrow says, when your dad hits you upside the head for insulting Iron Man and tells you to watch your mouth, # Civil War, # family divided. As he should have. No, I'm just kidding. People are allowed to dislike Tony. He's kind of difficult to like, but I'm glad that your dad is Team Tony. I actually was Skyping with my mom, and she hadn't seen the trailer yet, and so I sent it to her, and I was watching her watch the trailer for the first time, and it was really cute. And she was sad when Bucky and Steve were beating up on Tony. And she's, when he came on screen for the first time, she goes, here's your honey, because my mom knows me so, so well. So that was nice. But, you know, she's Team Thor, and Thor isn't going to be in Civil War. So that's a little sad. But I think she'll be there for Tony alongside me.
That was actually the perfect comment for you.
Yeah, it was.
We read Sarah's. So, Kristen, would you like to read Leah's?
Sure. Leah says, loved this week's The Flash / Arrow crossovers and so excited for Legends of Tomorrow now. Can't wait to hear your thoughts. I'm glad you were excited, because I'm pretty sure we gave you a lot of them.
Yeah, hopefully that did not disappoint.
Yes.
All right, so our question of the week, our last question of the week in honor of the Civil War trailer was, are you Team Cap or Team Tony or Team Everyone Just Get Along, Please? This hurts too much. Cassie answered that she's Team Cap. After all Steve has done and faced in the name of his country, a little freedom is the least he deserves. Tony's all, we need to be held accountable for what we've done. No, I'm sorry, Tony. You need to be held accountable. It's Tony's old arrogance and egocentrism that has gotten him into so much trouble. Who created Ultron? Who thought he could solve all the world's problems? Tony is the one who needs to be monitored, not necessarily by the government, but since he obviously does not listen to his friends regarding his experiments and projects, maybe it's time for him to be officially reined in.
I will agree that Tony is arrogant, and he is egocentric, and he does need to be monitored. However, he also created Vision, who can pick up Thor's hammer. I think that's kind of a big deal. Also, Bruce was there with him the entire time, so he added to this. And there are a lot of other characters, not just superheroes, who need to be monitored because they think what they're doing is right, when in fact it turns out horribly messing everything up. Let's just go watch The Winter Soldier again, shall we? So I politely disagree with 95% of that comment.
Because she's hashtag Team Tony.
Yes.
Amalia tweeted at us and said she is team everyone simmer down because Tony is so important to me and his Civil War sad face breaks my heart and stop hitting Tony. Wait, does that mean I'm Team Tony? What are the rules of this game? I think you have another member, Karen.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Yeah. And so our final question of the week, Kristen, would you like to read it?
Sure. Question of the week is, what would your first order be after Coulson names you acting director of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
So, not Mac, you. What are you going to do? So
tell everybody to lock up Coulson because he's being cray.
Good point.
That's a good plan. I would, let's see, if I was director of S.H.I.E.L.D., ooh, power. So much power. I would make everyone have a 30-second dance party and then take a nap because they're all cranky and they need to relax for 30 seconds. And just chill before they dive into more trouble. So
they need to Netflix and chill.
Yes! Yes!
So we're just going to turn S.H.I.E.L.D. into a giant Netflix party. I think
sure, why not?
That I can get behind as first jobs for S.H.I.E.L.D. So I would bring in Bucky and give him a blanket and hot cocoa and say, we'll protect you.
You have the best plan.
If we could find him ever.
Yeah.
But I would offer a blanket and hot chocolate, and that would be my plan. All right, so that is it for this week's episode. Again, Danya is sorry she could not be here, but I hope you loved having Kristen and Karen here, because I sure did, and they're pretty great. So
aww, thanks.
Make sure, do you guys want to tell everyone what your Twitter handles are so they can follow you and talk to you?
Yes, if you are hashtag Team Tony, come tweet me at Karen, K-A-R-E-N, underscore Rot, R-O-U-G-H-T.
And if you, like me, refuse to pick a side, including the everyone simmer down side, because I know people have reasons to be mad, and I'm supporting Karen as Team Tony because it's a rough world being a Tony fan. And he's the original, like, okay, I'm done. He's the original Marvel. Anyway, you can reach me at Kranzie85. I had to think for a second there. Kranzie85, K-R-A-N-Z-I-E 85 on Twitter.
Awesome. And you can reach our podcast at Hero Hype Podcast. And Danya and I are always checking it. So we'll, even if we don't respond, we are always reading them and we will put them on the show, most likely. So until next week, thanks for listening, guys. And I am Caitlin.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Kristen.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.